Good morning and welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. It's a lovely change of season kind of morning, but not quite. I kind of love that feel. This may become my favorite time of year here. Every week we light a chalice, and this week, let this flame remind us to illuminate what is real, lest we exaggerate what we imagine.
Welcome to the circle. How far have you come? Do you need some company, a candle or a song? Are you feeling weary, tired of being strong? Welcome to the circle. It's a place where you belong. Do you have a burden? It feels too much to bear. Do you have a bitterness you don't know how to share? Do you get too angry to breathe or laugh or pray? Well, there's no one in this circle who has never felt this way. No one in this circle who has never felt this way. Welcome to the circle, whatever brought you here. The valleys and the mountaintops, the muddy and the clear. And know your work is worthy, and know your heart is true. You know that all you give away comes circling back to you. You gotta know that all you give away will come circling back to you.
On this lovely gray morning, we've come together to share our lives, to sing and to speak and to listen. We've come together to celebrate the fullness of our lives, our joys and our sorrows, and the landmarks that mark our journeys. We give thanks for being here, young or old, dark and light, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and straight, each of us seeking truth, justice, and comfort. We give thanks for being here, be we rich or poor, currently able and disabled. We give thanks for having a place to be together and find meaning together. We give thanks for gathering together as separate individuals, bringing the wholeness of our lives into this congregation. We give thanks for coming together as people who are more than labels or categories. We are gathered here, each ministering to the other, meeting each other's strengths, encouraging wholeness. Here may we grow together, stretching our minds, opening our hearts, deepening our spirits. Here may we acknowledge our wounds and discover the beginning of healing. Here may we praise the gray days and the sunny days, this and every morning, and find hope for every new day. Come, let us worship. Or as the song says, let us enter, rejoice, and come in.
When I pick up this phone, what word am I supposed to say? Hello, hello, hello. Oh, okay, well, according to Oxford Dictionary, the first published use of hello goes back only to about 1830. And it wasn't mainly a greeting back then. You see, people said it to attract attention, like, hello, what do you think you're doing? Or to express surprise. Hello, what do we have here? Well, hello didn't become hi until the telephone arrived. Thomas Edison is given credit for inventing the word. He urged the people who used his phone to say hello when answering because it was a much more efficient alternative to, are you there? Or, Are you ready to talk? Hello is now among the first greeting that we know worldwide that always helps us to have verbal interaction with somebody who is new to us. And when we say hello in English, there's a lot of varieties. We could say good day or how are you? And depending on the time, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. And we could say it informally. Hey, or how's it going? Or what's up? Right, okay. So, you know, there are many different ways, and I'm going to encourage you now just to think for a moment on maybe you've traveled many places and you've visited other cultures and other countries, and you hear people saying that word, that greeting, meaning hello, in a different language. Has that happened to anyone? All right, so I'm just going to quiet the room for a minute. I'm going to ask you, invite you to call out that greeting. Hola. Bonjour. Aloha. Guten Tag. All right, so we have lots of... All right. I'm sorry?
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, okay. I was born in Korea, and my mother taught me, because she was a native of Korea. I guess if I was born in Korea, makes me kind of a native too. The way that she taught me that Korean people greeted other Korean people is that they would say, Annyeong. But that was if I was talking to my friends or somebody who was younger than me, Annyeong. The correct and polite way would be, Annyeonghaseyo. And I wrote it here in Korean. And the English translation is, are you peaceful? So when Koreans greet other people, what they're asking each other is, are you peaceful? So I'd like to finish up by telling you a story about a tribe in Africa. And this tribe in Africa is a very accomplished tribe in all of Africa, and no tribe was considered to have warriors that were more fearsome or more intelligent than this group group called the Maasai, and they lived in Kenya. And you may be surprised to learn that the traditional greeting among the Maasai warriors is Kasarina Ingera. And Kasarina Ingera. I'm going to ask you to repeat that. Kasarina Ingera. And which this means in Swahili is, and how are the children? It's still the traditional greeting among the Maasai, acknowledging the high value that the Maasai people always place on their children's well-being. And even those with no children of their own often give the traditional answer, which is, all the children are well. Meaning, of course, that peace and safety prevails, that the priorities of protecting the young and powerless are in place. And the Maasai society had not forgotten its reason for being and its responsibilities. All the children are well. That means life is good. This story illustrates a society that values its children so highly that a reminder of them is part of every greeting. I wonder how it might be if, in our culture, we were to greet each other with this daily question. And how are the children? And if we heard that question and we passed it along to each other a dozen times a day, would it make a difference in the reality of how children are thought of or cared about in our society? I wonder. What would it be like?
Something I love about that moment when youth exit and take their lovely energy with them. And for a moment, I feel that lack, but I remember the joy of being all together at once. It's a tough time in the world. It's really rough news, it seems like, every day and from everywhere. And I know a lot of us don't know what to do with that news. We don't know how to keep ourselves grounded and centered and calm. How is it with you? How is it with the child in you? just to stretch the greetings a little bit. How is your inner child, I wonder? Mine gets anxious sometimes, fearful sometimes, often sad that life isn't easier for the world right now. But every day, every moment, there is great joy in the world. God, who is our mother, father, spirit in which we live and move and breathe, the unknowable, the great mystery from whence we came, be with us always as we are with each other. Help us strive to be with each other in better ways, always. In what appear to be our loneliest moments, help us remember that we often forget how close we are to each other, how alike we are. When we feel the warmth of those near us or hear voices in the next room or feel the air move, note our awareness of others and let us be reminded that we are never alone. As we go through our days in a world full of such injustice and war, cruelty and violence, which causes fear in us, let us forgive and be forgiven our moments of pettiness. In times of such hostility and aggression, may we forgive and be forgiven our moments of anger. May we remember that under our anger is something missing in our lives, some grief, and under our grief is an unmet part of our being. And we can follow that path and with help from each other, replenish ourselves. May we learn to move beyond the need to forgive and be forgiven, arrive at a place of honoring and celebrating the human condition in all our complex and astonishing variety, for not arriving at that place yet, for being clumsy along the way, or forgetting where we're going together. Let us forgive ourselves and be forgiven. Let's awaken to the beauty that surrounds us, the beauty in each other, and the beauty in ourselves. Amen.
Well, every morning I read a daily meditation book, and every day it asks a question. And on one day it asks the question, something like, am I open to the ever-expanding circles of love and fellowship? And that question inspired me to write this song. Within an opening circle, it says, my family is extending beyond my comprehension. Every person that's before me is the one that I'm befriending. As the circle grows, I am not alone, and I know I'm only one among the many. I'm widening my circle. I am opening to others. I am opening to others with the actions of my hands and the guidance of my heart. In the work of love and kindness, I'm ready to do my part, and I'm reaching out in peace within an opening circle. My family is extending beyond my comprehension. Every person that's before me is the one that I'm befriending. As the circle grows, I am not alone, and I know I'm only one among the many. And I become the light, light as a feather, and I am only part of a love that lasts forever. I'm holding out my hand for my brothers and my sisters. I'm walking on this land, and it's turning into heaven. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace within an open circle. Thank you.
extending beyond my comprehension. Every person that's before me is the one that I'm befriending. As the circle grows, I am not alone, and I know I'm only one among the many. And I become the light, light as a feather, and I am only part of a love that lasts forever. I'm holding out my hand for my brothers and my sisters, walking on this land, and it's turning into heaven. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace within an opening circle. I'm widening my circle. I'm opening to others. I'm widening my circle. I'm opening to others. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace. I am reaching out in peace within an opening circle.
Just a couple days ago, I came into the sanctuary for something, the empty sanctuary, and I took several minutes to walk around and look at the art on the walls. And I arrived this morning and it's different art. And it reminds me that one of my favorite coffee shops in a city far from here was called Heart Coffee. And up on the wall was this lovely anatomical, accurate drawing of a human heart with, you know, the parts pointed out, like you'd find in Grey's Anatomy. That's the TV show. What's the book called? Same thing? I don't know. Yeah. So I have really mixed feelings about this because I don't know. I see a brain and a pelvis and a lot of parts, and there's a heart in the middle. And I think I like it because it's like all the whole picture kind of thing from the inside. It might be something entirely different. It's just caught my attention today, as well as this fierce set of eyes over here. And I really love that. And I just want to point this out partly because one of the delightful things here is the constantly rotating artwork. And it can go unnoticed unless something really grabs your attention, like one of those two. It's really a delight. And there are some things that surprise me that I really like. Some surprises, of course, aren't any fun at all. But this, along with a couple others, have been real delightful this week, or at least potentially delightful. I might find out that that really troubles me, but right now it intrigues me. One delightful surprise is I feel like I've been taken hostage by poets, forced to recall fragments of favorite and relevant poetry at odd moments, totally uninvited. It's been haunting me. I get pulled into searches for the right author or title. Who wrote that one that starts with, a poem can begin with a lie and be torn up. A conversation has other rules, and it goes on from there. And I spent 3 days remembering that was Adrienne Rich and finding the poem. Just keep pulling into these searches, and I get captivated by what I find or by what I find nearby. I also, in preparing for today, noticed that September is amazingly full of significant religious celebrations and rituals. I really hadn't thought about it. I know that September is the beginning of the Orthodox Church year. I know that almost all of our UU congregations in America start their program year in September. I hadn't really thought that right now, this weekend, approximately exactly now, the annual pilgrimage to Mecca has been happening and is concluding with the Feast of Sacrifice. So the Muslim world is doing a very big thing in their tradition. Along with just starting the year, the Eastern Orthodox Christians are celebrating the Nativity of the Theotokos, which I missed the language from seminary, Theotokos, the bearer of God, Mary, the Nativity of Mary. That's this week. In Hinduism, September includes a lot of things, including the Fortnight of Remembrance, a couple of weeks devoted to the remembrance of ancestors, specifically those of your own family who have passed away. Then there's Durga Puja. This is Hindu as well, a nine-night celebration to invoke the energy of God in the form of the Universal Mother, commonly referred to as Durga, but having many other names, including Devi and Shakti. The 10th day of that celebration is a festive day observed by immersing deities used in worship over those 9 days, or burning the effigies of Ravana, which is part of the stories in Hinduism. That happens on September 30th this year, when we also note American Universalism Day, which isn't really much of a thing. You can't really find it by searching for it. But it is the day in 1770 when John Murray preached the first Universalist sermon in America after being persuaded by his friend and patron Thomas Potter in what was then Good Luck, New Jersey. It has not been turned into a casino. It's been turned into the Murray Grove Conference Center. But Good Luck sounds like it could have gone anywhere. Murray immigrated from England to lose himself in America after being excommunicated from the Calvinist Church in England because of his beliefs in universal salvation. John Murray is considered the originator of Universalism in America. So we have American Universalism Day. But the most significant religious events of September for me are the New Year celebrations that occur in both Islam and Judaism. I don't know much about Hijra, the Islamic New Year, except that it marks the migration of the Prophet Muhammad and his followers from Mecca to Medina. Which one's Ohio? Which one's Saudi Arabia? At the same time, Wiccans will celebrate Mabon, the harvest festival on the autumnal equinox, and will enter Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish holiday commonly referred to as the Jewish New Year. Now, Rosh Hashanah is the first of the high holy days, the days of awe, 10 days specifically set aside for reflection, repentance, and renewal. They conclude with Yom Kippur, the most solemn day in the Jewish calendar, the Day of Atonement. And its central themes are reflection and atonement, becoming one. Yom Kippur is the 10th and final day of the 10 days of awe. And that's our target for September. That's how we conclude September this year. We will be approaching the Day of Atonement mindfully. Now, noting all these various religious holidays feels like a setup for a story about a Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jew, Wiccan, and Universalist walking into a bar. Except it's not a bar, it's a church. Or maybe it's a poor young family, a wealthy retired couple, a bouncy gay boy, someone of ambiguous gender, and a rule-bound old lady. And we want to be hospitable as they walk into the bar or the church. Or maybe it's someone struggling to stay emotionally, mentally, and spiritually healthy, someone terrified by their own life and the possibility of more loss and how will they bear it. Maybe it's somebody who has already lost everything they valued, someone fighting to stay sober, someone angry and unable to direct their anger wisely, someone with a great capacity for love and no place to put it. Someone who truly believes we should all just act as if things are fine. Someone who has spent their life pretending everything is fine and now imagines it might not be. Someone who hasn't heard a genuine kind word for so long that you'd break down sobbing if you knew. Maybe that's who it is, because that's who it is. That's who we are, all of the above. And it's not a bar, it's a church. That's not a joke. It's a life. And we genuinely want to be welcoming and hospitable. And we genuinely succeed in moments, which really is all anyone can expect. After all, we are all of those people. Never mind that little saying that we're made of snips and snails and puppy dog tails or sugar and spice and everything nice. Each of us is really made of all the above. Strong in some way, fearful in some way, sometimes neglectful, sometimes spot on, sometimes spinning out wildly, and sometimes well-grounded and centered. Hospitality is delicate because we are fragile and flawed and fierce and fickle, because we are humans. And when we allow for the whole of humanity, we cannot know in advance what will occur. All of my attention and study of the matter can lead to many methods when it comes to church life. Are the signs welcoming? Are the words we use welcoming? And so on. All of that's pretty empty without the one human heart greeting another in all our strength and all our need, all at once. And we are all in this together. And until we know that, until we find each other, we're alone. Thanks to the aforementioned poet, Adrienne Rich, I can say, until we find each other, we are alone. It's simple in our roughly literal life to abnegate power for love. I am the point of division, but I can't call this life. We will not live to settle for less. I'm alive to want more from life. I'm choosing something new, not to suffer uselessly. I choose to love with all my intelligence. I want to call this life. Until we find each other, we are alone. Adrienne Rich was fierce and angry in most of her poetry. There was always a deep longing, the one I mentioned before, that starts, "A poem can begin with a lie and be torn up. A conversation has other rules." She goes on to describe how we build such fierce, evil things in conversation, and we can't tear it up. It's permanent. The poem can go away. Anyway, way back when, in seminary, I realized I'd only been to a few churches in my life. Here I was in my mid-40s, and I was devoting my life to Unitarian Universalism, and I realized I'd just been to St. John's Cathedral as part of Catholic school in the first grade, and I'd gone to the Church of the Sacred Heart until junior high or so, and a couple of others for funerals. Then the UU church I found in my early 30s, accidentally, just because we needed to rent space for the school we were starting. Really not enough variety for a minister to understand what church is, eh? Well, at my seminary, we were able to create classes to address our unique needs. So I created church shopping, which I passed with flying colors, of course. Except when I design a course of study, it seems it's never complete. So I'm not done yet. It's been 20 years or so. I still constantly review my experiences of what is and isn't welcoming, keeping in mind the diversity we crave and the certainty that everybody fails sometimes. I still attend other churches, and I learn about things. I take mental notes. I use the rubric I store in my memory, letting it evolve as my awareness evolves. And I leave X church, whatever it is, whatever denomination, whatever town, and I ask myself, Did I feel welcome there? Did I feel welcome there? Was I objectified there? Was I isolated there? Was I pounced upon there? Because all of those happen. And that's how I know we all fail sometimes. out of all of those experiences, there may have been one where they were intentionally kind of horrible. Everybody really wants to be welcoming and hospitable, I believe. My job naturally keeps me attentive at more than a casual level to how welcoming or unwelcoming we are. And having to move so many times because of this interim work to different places has helped me develop a broad perspective from coast to coast, from the most north, from Fairbanks to Key West. I've covered a lot of turf. Sometimes we fail to welcome the stranger. Sometimes we are the stranger. And we all mostly want a place to feel we belong. We often say, after being in a church a long time, it's like my family. It's like I found my family. And I have to say, as a newcomer, that's horrifying. Have you ever had in-laws? You know how hard it is to join someone else's family? Oh my goodness. But the statement reflects something beautiful. But put upon a newcomer, it's intimidating. A newcomer might say, it felt like coming home. It's not the same thing as I found my family. Coming home means the door was open. The people were friendly. We had some reason to be together. Maybe later I'll feel like I found my family. And then someone will tell me that that's scary to newcomers, and I'll remember, oh yes, when I first got here, if someone had told me that, I would have really wondered, how do I qualify to be part of your family now? We're strangers. I was looking for my copy of David White's poems called House of Belonging, thinking that this would help inform what I wanted to say today. And I couldn't find it on the shelf, so I ended up shopping for a new copy. And, you know, the poetry section in bookstores keeps getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I went all the way to the big Barnes & Noble in Fairlawn, and they've reduced it to two sections of shelving. And they put it in a place where you can't find it. And they don't have David White. Not a single issue of any David White. But I found Leonard Cohen's book, House of Longing. Well, that's a little different than David White's book, House of Belonging. Cohen's a little harder to use in church, so I'm not even going to try. I didn't buy the book right now. Not so helpful today. So I went home and I found the one poem, the title poem from that book, House of Belonging. I awoke this morning in the gold light, turning this way and that, thinking for a moment it was one day like any other. But the veil had gone from my darkened heart, and I thought, it must have been the quiet candlelight that filled my room. It must have been the first easy rhythm with which I breathed myself to sleep. It must have been the prayer, I said, speaking to the otherness of the night. And I thought, this is the good day you could meet your love. This is the black day someone close to you could die. This is the day you realize how easily the thread is broken between this world and the next. And I found myself sitting up in the quiet pathway of light, the tawny, close-grained cedar burning round me like fire, and all the angels of this housely heaven ascending through the first roof of light the sun has made. This is the bright home in which I live. This is where I ask my friends to come. This is where I want to love all the things it has taken me so long to learn to love. This is the temple of my adult aloneness, and I belong to that aloneness as I belong to my life. There is no house like the house of belonging. And having found that poem, I found something else David White said. He was speaking on belonging and how to be at home in yourself. So we have a church we can refer to as my home. We have a house, like David White describes, a house of belonging. Now he's talking about how to be at home in yourself, which seems like a good thing for all of us to do, is to find out how to be with ourselves in a comforting way. So David White says, "To feel as if you belong is one of the great triumphs of human existence, and especially to sustain a life of belonging and to invite others into that." As David White would do, let me repeat. To feel as if you belong is one of the great triumphs of human existence, and especially to sustain a life of belonging and to invite others into that. I think that's hospitality, among other things. But it's interesting to think that our sense of slight woundedness around not belonging is actually one of our core competencies. That though the crow is just itself, and the stone is just itself, and the mountain is just itself, and the cloud and the sky is just itself, we are the one part of creation that knows what it's like to live in exile. And that the ability to turn your face toward home is one of the great human endeavors and the great human stories. It's interesting to think that no matter how far you are from yourself, no matter how exiled you feel from your contribution to the rest of the world or to society, that as a human being, all you have to do is enumerate exactly the way you don't feel at home in the world, to say exactly how you don't belong. And the moment you've uttered the exact dimensionality of your exile, you're already taking the path back to the way, back to the place you should be. You're already on your way home. And I wondered for a while why this amazing poet, who often sends me dancing in a warm breeze of images and depth in the plain yet sinuous flowing words he uses, why was he now speaking with such strict language? To enumerate exactly the way you don't feel at home in the world, to say exactly how you don't belong. And he tells us to utter the exact dimensionality of our exile from our better selves. And I reflected and I realized why. It's because he's right. And because this was spoken, not yet softened by the creation of simile, metaphor, and analogy, this was David White pre-poem speaking. That same message he could turn into the house of belonging. The stone, the cloud, the sky, the crow, the mountain, they are what they are. We're the only scorekeepers on the planet, we humans. When the crow needs a new nest, it doesn't become a crow that's lacking something, it becomes a crow that is building a nest, because that's what it does. Our human core competency of slight woundedness resulting from things not being perfect to the way we imagined seems unlikely to be a helpful way of showing hospitality toward the stranger, who by definition doesn't yet belong, nor is it helpful to ourselves. Better to stop measuring, I think, and comparing and tallying, and just be in the moment. Easier to say than succeed, but as we lit the short-lived candle this morning, said, let us remember to illuminate what is real, lest we exaggerate what we imagine. The rest of that would be, because then what we imagine will blind us from reality, will keep us from being able to tell what is real and true. Also easier to say than succeed. Instead of looking at chosen identities, consider that we're all craving and we're all lacking, we're all seeking and sometimes finding, and we fail a lot and sometimes not. Ultimately, whatever age, sex, faith, or lack thereof, whatever labels we claim or have foisted upon us, don't we all just want to be understood and to understand and to have some feeling of security and safety and to know we aren't alone? We are so much alike that there may not actually be strangers, just unknown friends. So the other poet who's been haunting my days concludes for us. Wisława Szymborska, Contribution to Statistics. Out of 100 people, those who always know better, 52. Doubting every step, nearly all the rest. Glad to lend a hand if it doesn't take too long, as high as 49. Always good because they can't be otherwise, 4, well, maybe 5. Able to admire without envy, 18. Suffering illusions induced by fleeting youth, 60, give or take a few. Not to be taken lightly, 40 and 4. Living in constant fear of someone or something, 77. Capable of happiness, 20-something tops. Harmless singly, savage in crowds, half at least. Cruel when forced by circumstances. Better not to know, even ballpark figures. Wise after the fact. Just a couple more than wise before it. Taking only things from life. 30, I wish I was wrong. Hunched in pain, no flashlight in the dark. 83, sooner or later. Worthy of compassion. 99. Mortal, 100 out of 100. Thus far, this figure still remains unchanged. So when greeting someone for the first time, or the 100th, or when looking in the mirror, remember the last two. Worthy of compassion, 99 out of 100. Mortal, 100 out of 100. There are no strangers. The great discovery, the great key to the delicate art of hospitality is that we're all humans together with all of the traits the poets know. And care enough to reach out and find a hand nearby. This is a delicate art to reach out and recognize that for some, this is the first human touch in a while. For some, this is uncomfortable because of certain feelings about germs or whatever, which is my chance for my usual public service announcement. Wash your hands early and often. It is the best way to prevent the transmission of disease, especially in cold and flu season, which hasn't arrived yet, but will. And isn't that what we've all done? We haven't arrived yet. We're still on journeys in our lives. We don't come to church because everything is fine in the world. We come to church for continuous healing of our continuous brokenness. Let's try to remain humble in our humanity. We really don't have a choice of whether we're broken or not. We are. And we do have a choice in how we heal. Let's do it together and well and constantly. Go in peace. Thank you.